From KCRW Santa Monica and KCRW.com, it's The Treatment. Welcome to The Treatment from my house. I'm Elvis Mitchell. There is a terrific film of a few years back called Saving Face, and one of my favorite lines in the movie is, "Fate is for the lazy." It's a line that could apply to the new film by the writer-director Alice Wu, The Half of It. Alice, first of all, thanks so much for being here.
Thank you so much. It's really my pleasure.
But I love that line, "Fate is for the lazy."
I think it's just a very Chinese line. I thought really, like, it's so funny to me what people think is funny, because there are times when I think something's hilarious and clearly nobody else agrees with me. But then out of nowhere, something that I think makes perfect sense. Like, probably the biggest laugh line in Saving Face is when the grandmother points to her granddaughter's boots and is like, "I had a pair just like that, just the thing for war." And everyone bursts out laughing. And I thought it was like a completely reasonable thing to say. Like, that's completely what my grandmother would have said. So it's always sort of delightful to find out what the world finds humorous in one's life, I suppose.
Well, I think that's one of the things that unites these two films for me, is that I think you're really adept at shifting points of view. So we, as soon as somebody speaks, we know who and what they are. And I wonder, because I guess you initially thought about being a novelist, and if one of the things that attracted you to screenwriting is that you found you had an affinity for characters expressing themselves that let us know who they were as people almost immediately.
Mm. Yeah, I think one of the other things I really discovered is that I tend to write from a very personal place. And, you know, being a Chinese lesbian or Chinese American lesbian and growing up in a very sort of strict Chinese family, one of the things in my experience is that it's not what you say, but what you don't say that matters. No one in my family says things like, "I love you." Like, that is the kind of thing you might say to a lover, but like, parents and children don't say those things. We do things for each other. And I think it became really clear to me that when I was thinking about writing a novel, attempting to write the sort of interiority of a character would on some level mean that either I would need an unreliable narrator, or I would probably have to write it from an omniscient point of view, because I just didn't think any of my characters were that self-actualized, mainly because I'm not that self-actualized, or certainly not then. And what I think film does that's kind of great is that you can, thank you for talking about the shifting points of view. And there's certainly moments in a scene where I'm clearly saying this is this character's point of view. But then what I really love is when that character is alone, or they think they're alone, there's a moment when I can show what's actually happening on their face, like whether they're aware of it or not, right? And I think that kind of intimacy is something that I think film can provide that I'm not sure any other medium does quite as well.
No, I'm glad you brought that up, because I think one of the things that really resonates is the way characters' sort of physical deportment changes by themselves. I'm thinking about your leads in both the films, how they physically they're different people when they're by themselves.
I wonder if that's just a common human thing. I mean, it's funny because we're in this pandemic and now we're on all these Zoom meetings, and which means that, well, at least for me, I'm suddenly confronted with an image of myself when I'm in a meeting, which in real life, I'm sitting amongst people. I don't have a camera on myself to see myself, but it's like a kind of a terrifying experience, or perhaps horrifying is a better word, when I see my face and I'm like, that's what I look like when I'm putting on like my meeting face. And maybe that is just something inherent in, like, you know, I don't know. I guess we all have a public self and a private self. And as I get older, I think for me, the dream is to try and bring those two things as close as possible. But I think my characters tend to be people who those two things are quite far apart. And it's in that kind of a struggle between those two things is kind of where they live.
Yeah, it's funny you're talking about that because I feel like if we're talking about the half of it, the way Ellie reacts when people are seeing her, she almost is trying to will herself into not being seen except when she's in really intimate situations, when she's really close to people, like with her teacher or the triangle that becomes part of the movie. Then she realizes that she's being regarded in a way that she's not. And I guess I want you to talk about that because that kind of hiding in plain sight aspect or not being seen the way they want to be seen is really, I mean, appearances, I guess, is really kind of key to the way you structure your pieces and your characters, isn't it?
Yeah, I'm really glad you noticed that. I wonder if it's just because of the way I grew up and the way I sort of view my role in the world, which now that I'm older, I suspect a lot of people feel similarly. Like, I guess what I'd say is, for example, high school, right? Like, high school was a profoundly lonely experience for me. Now, as an adult, I finally discovered that it turns out that it's pretty much a profoundly lonely experience for everyone. But when you're in high school, you don't know that. You think you are like the loneliest of the lonely and that everybody else has figured it out, right? And so I think there's this way with movies, like who's the main character is actually a really interesting question. I think one of the things that maybe, you know, my work does is I tend to have these very commercial hooks, but I tend to show characters, and especially the main character tends to be someone who almost is never the main character. Maybe they're like a side character. Maybe they're an extra, or maybe they're not even in the movie, right? And I think that's somewhat significant because I think that I would say for both my main characters that the way they're living their lives, they don't think they're the main character in their life. Like neither of them would think, yes, this is a story of how I eventually get this thing that I want. Because for them, that just seems like not even something that's available to them. And so there's a certain joy. And I wonder if it's even like a secret wish myself, right? Like when you're growing up, I at least didn't really think that the world was a place where I would end up being a main character in it. Like I think my greatest hope is that we would just survive as an immigrant family and that things would be fine and that maybe we rise up the economic ladder and that we have comfortable lives and nothing terrible happens to us. Like that was pretty much the dream. I certainly would not have thought, like if you asked me in high school, there's zero chance I would have thought, yes, someday I was going to direct a movie. You might as well have told me aliens were coming from space to get all of us. Like that would feel equally probable. And so knowing that makes me kind of feel like, well, maybe unconsciously I'm setting these characters who don't think that there's a chance of really being, you know, the main character. But by the end of the movie, they are. Like, they're pretty much in almost every frame of the film. And at the end, this is their story. And that there's something kind of revelatory for themselves in that. And maybe we cheer them on. Because I think for most people, I don't think my experience is unique. I bet most people would identify with me and not truly believing that they could be the main character in their story. And so you want that so much for this character. And then maybe it gives you some hope that you could have it for yourself.
It's a treatment. We're talking self-actualization with my guest, Alice Wu, whose new film for Netflix is The Half of It. And it's funny, as you were talking about that, I was thinking that there are characters in both these pieces, your protagonists, for example, or people who are regarded or people who pay attention to them, or people who really know them. It's funny because I was thinking about this in the choice of the movies that Ellie's watching in The Half of It, Casablanca. There's almost a relationship, a kind of a Claude Rains, Bogart relationship in both these films. I was thinking about that dance where she goes to the beginning of Saving Face and she's talking to a friend and then Ellie's relationship with her teacher. I mean, this kind of idea that, you know, they're these two cynical people who really see what's going on around them. And then there are people in those orbits who think of themselves as being stars or being the center of attention. And you populate your worlds with both of those kinds of people. I mean, the people who don't think of themselves as being even the center of their own worlds and the people who think they're the center of everybody's world.
Yeah, I have not thought about it that way, but you're absolutely right. And I wonder, you know, because in terms of the characters that feel like they're the center of everybody's world, what's interesting is like, I'm going to assume, like, for example, in Saving Face, that for example, it might be that in terms of for Will, like her mom seems to be taking on that role. Is that kind of what you might be alluding to?
Yeah, oh, absolutely that. And because these people sort of don't know when to get off the stage. And you literally, in the half of it, there's a stage show going on. And people who sort of comport themselves as if they're the center of the known world. And that there are people, the protagonists, find that kind of attractive and repellent at the same time.
I see. Yeah. No, I love that you brought that up. I mean, what's interesting is that in the first case, when I was thinking maybe you meant the mother, what I think is interesting is that from the main character, like from Will's point of view, Ma takes up so much air in the room. But if we switched POVs and this was totally the mother story, I don't think that mother thinks that she's the main character in her story either. In fact, so much of that is like she also feels like her life is over. She's just like kind of a side character trying to, you know, live her life for her daughter and for her parents, right? But then you switch to in the half of it, the character like Trig, who is like the big man on campus and who, like you said, doesn't seem to, like everybody loves Trig. Everything happens for him in his life. What I find fascinating about a character like that is his arc is literally by the end of the movie, for the very first time in his life, something didn't go exactly the way he thought it would. And he has to think about that, which in a weird way, I think is kind of a weirdly happy arc for him, because maybe it'll push him. But it is sort of like a fascinating, you know, like and maybe because there's just, I mean, I admit none of my close friends are like this. But every now and then I'll meet someone who just seems like, you know, they tend to be young because like, but that who just everything seemed like they just assume that, you know, this is their world and the rest of us are just living in it. And there's something sort of charming in that kind of, it's both charming and irritating, I guess. And so it's kind of fun in this film to have that character have a little bit of comeuppance.
Well, I guess, yeah, and as we were talking about this, I was thinking about early on in Saving Face where Will goes to the dance and basically has to get rid of this guy who thinks that he's going to end up being her savior, her white knight. And I like the way that you deal with these kinds of characters who are so shaped by pop culture. And especially these guys, I mean to say, who think that they're, you know, these superheroes.
Yeah, I think, and it's sort of funny because I would say that generally in my movies, I really don't have any villains, you know, but I do have characters that they're usually not the main characters, but I do have these characters that, you know, maybe we groan a bit and we're like, ugh, but I often find them sort of hilarious. And they often end up being the characters that the audience finds, you know, as amongst the funniest, right? And I sort of love that because I genuinely have an affection for them, even when they are being so sort of oblivious to their effect on, like there's almost like a genuine lack of empathy in them. And yet they're not bad people, you know, they're just sort of almost like charmingly oblivious, which I maybe reflects my worldview a bit. I'm not sure.
Because when you said self-actualization, I guess I think of both these movies as being companion pieces, and they're about people who gain some self-awareness when they come to understand how they're looked at by other people.
Yeah. Yeah. Are you about to ask me if I'm self-actualized?
Well, since you bring it up, sure, Alice, why not?
Oh, gosh. You know, actually, here's a story you might enjoy. The thing that comes to mind is that okay, I will say this. As someone who's a computer science geek and who never in a million years thought I would make a movie, and then I, you know, the stars aligned, I'm making a movie. I do remember this moment on the set of Saving Face. So honestly, I kind of bought into this idea, which I now realize is ludicrous, that being a director meant that you are somehow cool. You know, like that this is like a cool job, and therefore I am now a cool person. And as somebody who was so deeply shy and would have like two friends for most of my childhood, I'm not going to lie. There's a little part of me, like when I was on my set, there's this one moment where I'm like, I'm cool. And then what happened is in the first week of my shoot, and it was like a night shoot. And so lunch was at like 3 a.m. or something. And lunch for me is just my producers and the AD descending upon me saying like, oh God, you know, you're gonna have to cut shots. And I'm like going through my shot list. And one table over off to the left erupts in laughter. And I look over there and my main, you know, the lead in my film, Michelle Kruzik, who's playing Will, is doing all these imitations of me, like the way I walk and the way I laugh and the way I, like, it's, and everyone is just like eating this up. And I'm like watching this and it's like, it's literally like one's nightmare, right? It's like the lunchroom nightmare that like you come into the lunchroom in high school and somebody is like making fun of you and everyone is enjoying it, right? Only the lucky thing is that like people were, because Michelle looked over, was like, Alice, look at this, look at this. This is how you eat. And I was just like, oh my God, that is how I eat and walk and talk. I was so genuinely horrified. And so there was just this moment where I was like, oh dear God, I'm not cool at all. And it was this sort of deep realization. But then my next thought was like, you know what's kind of good is that apparently it doesn't really matter, because even though I clearly am not cool, these people are still listening to my direction. So apparently it's possible to exist in one's life as not cool and still, you know, be effective or be loved. And it was like literally, I think that was a moment of like genuine great self-acceptance.
Let's take a break. My guest, who clearly hadn't met too many directors that she thought directors were cool, is Alice Wu. Her new film for Netflix is The Half of It. It's The Treatment. There's more that comes. Stay with us.
Introducing the KCRW donation car, designed to be recycled. This first-of-its-kind vehicle will save you time, space, and hassle by disappearing. Enjoy the luxury and comfort of turning your underused car into a donation worth hundreds, even thousands of dollars. The KCRW donation car, already in your garage, driveway, or on cinder blocks outside your house. Act now at kcrw.com/cars.
Welcome back. It's The Treatment. My very cool guest is writer-director Alice Wu. Her new film as writer-director is The Half of It on Netflix. And I guess this is the point where I should ask you to let the audience know what the movie's about.
Okay, but I do have to say that I just got mocked by Elvis Mitchell, which I genuinely think is a moment where I actually feel like I've truly arrived. So I just kind of want to relish this. But the movie is about, you know, it kind of depends on, I mean, it's funny, as a storyteller, I try not to think too much about like what is the message of this movie, and I try and write something very specifically, and in some ways it's about what if there's this one person who is like the last person on earth that you think you would possibly connect with, but that person ends up like somehow changing your life, right? Like, so there's that piece of it. But I also think like in another way I look at it is it sometimes feels like it's a little bit like the triumph of the Asian nerd. I don't know, but I guess ultimately what I'm interested in is I think when you make a film, you know, you try and make it as true to what you believe feels authentic to you, but then you put it out there and the film just takes on a life of its own. And I think, you know, there's already a lot of like interesting cultural conversation that I would never have predicted would have sprung out of people anticipating this film. And it's going to be interesting to see how they react. And some people will love it and some people will hate it and some people will be colossally disappointed, and I don't know. I guess I'm curious because the film, I guess, just takes on, you know, a larger life than me.
I just find myself thinking that these movies are really about, again, I keep saying recognition. I mean, because and people arrive at recognition on at different points in these movies, and that's what I find so fascinating about these two movies is that there are actually more people in them than we kind of expect who get a chance to show us who and what they are. And I just wonder about that process. Because even though there's, I think these movies are kind of densely populated in their way, they're both about, I guess, trios. And the movie references in the half of it, which are Wings of Desire and The Philadelphia Story and Casablanca, are also movies that are kind of about these threesomes, you know, these love yeah. triangles. And
yeah, that was deliberate.
Oh, even I can figure that out. I know. It's hard to believe, but yeah, I got that.
You would be surprised how many people had not figured that out.
Really? Like,
yeah, people are like, why did you pick those movies? And I was like, oh, well, like His Girl Friday, they all have a love triangle in them. Yeah.
But that's even a part of, I mean, subtextually a part of Saving Face, too. And I just wonder what it is about. There's two things I want to ask you about, and we'll start with the triangles, but also the way you use dances in movies, too.
Interesting. Well, the first thing you said, which I think you're absolutely right in terms of the recognition, I think both movies are very much about characters who do not want to be seen for one reason or another at the beginning of the film. And at the end of the film, they've been seen, you know, and that turns out to be a triumph. And I think that in terms of triangles, I think maybe because I generally find that things are not like, I want this thing, but there's like some obvious external reason I can't have it that is like a dragon I have to slay. That's literal, right? I generally find that most of the reasons why we don't go after the thing that we might secretly want is usually because there's another thing in our life that we deeply love and care about. That's not a bad thing, but because we love and we care about that thing, we feel like we will hurt that person or that relationship if we go after the thing we want. And I think that's like a very central tension that I felt in my life and that my characters feel. And that's the thing that keeps them from fully going for, you know, what would make them happiest. And I guess maybe that in and of itself already presents an emotional triangle. So then the next thing to do is to externalize it. Like, so in Saving Face, the most obvious way to externalize it is finally the main character meets someone who's worthy of her love and who loves her, right? Because up till then, she's not really met that person. Anyone she dates, it's like a non-issue because those people are probably not good for her. But she finally meets someone who would be great. And on top of that, her mom comes crashing into her life. So that's an externalization of her desire to figure out how to be a good daughter and how to have love. And I think in a lot of ways, Saving Face is not like a traditional romantic comedy in that it's just about, is she going to get the girl or is she not going to get the girl? For me, Saving Face is about, can she have love and have her family together in an authentic way? And I think with the half of it, it also turns out not to be about, does she get the girl? Does he get the girl? Who gets the girl? It really ends up being about, like, you know, like she doesn't think there's a future for herself because she's just thinking about her dad. Like her dad has lost the love of his life. She doesn't have time to even grieve her mom herself because her dad is taking up all that space. And her dad truly, clearly loves her. Like they have a genuine, tender relationship. And this is a good man. And I think it's like for her, the idea that she would pursue anything in her life feels like a deep abandonment of her dad. So there's no point in even thinking about that. But then, and what comes crashing into her life is this scenario that then allows her to sort of explore the fact that she's had, you know, she starts developing these feelings. And like just the idea that there's another person that could actually get her and connect with her, like in the form of Aster. But then almost without her realizing it, Paul, who's the most emotionally intelligent character in the film, emotionally connects with her. Sort of while she's not paying attention, she's so focused on this like deep intellectual connection she's having. She builds this like incredibly sweet emotional friendship with Paul. And so then And he's really, I think, the person who starts to shine a light on certain things to be like, wait, why is this happening? What about this? And I think, you know, that kind of encouragement is what allows her to eventually start to have some space to think about what she might really want.
It's the treatment, I guess, as Alice Wu, whose new film is writer director for Netflix, is the half of it. I guess, though, one of the things I find myself thinking about in these films is that for your protagonist, it's the triangles also sort of consist of this thing where there's somebody who's idealized and then somebody who's the kind of the nightmare version of what they might be like. And they come to realizations about both these figures that the ideal is neither as lofty or as pristine as they imagine, and the horror version of themselves has actually a lot more depth and interest than they might have thought otherwise.
Wow, I'm so fascinated because I'm trying to think. I see how that applies in the half of it. But are you sort of saying, like in Saving Face, are you kind of talking about the mom absorbing the horror version of herself, like
yeah,
that relationship
absolutely.
With her mom? That's an amazing,
yes.
insightful. Like, it's sort of blowing my mind a little bit because I'm like, you're absolutely right because I've never thought about it that way. But yes, it's like in her head.
Really, you hadn't thought about it? Because I thought it was so conscious because the way the mom is introduced is this person who's sort of caring for everybody and not having, if you pardon me for using this term or phrase, any agency in her own life. And that to her would probably be representative of not being her own person, which is her fear.
Yeah. No, you're totally right. And I think it absolutely is in there and it is intentional. I've just never heard it expressed in such a, like, there's a sort of resonance about the way you just expressed that. And I'm like, God, I guess maybe because I'm wondering if this just has to do with my own cultural conditioning as a Chinese American. Like, you know, I guess if we're really honest, a lot of us would be like, oh my God, we just don't want to end up like our parents. And then the next thought we would have is what a terrible child we are for having that thought. You know, like how could you so deeply disrespect your parents by having that thought, right? And so I'm wondering what it is that, yes, that is exactly what I'm feeling, but also it would be hard for me to admit, which might be why I'm a storyteller, because I think fiction kind of allows you to tell truths that you wouldn't otherwise say out loud, right? Like you can say, I want to pretend I don't get depressed. I don't feel like writing about being depressed. So I'm going to write about giants in Swaziland. But then you end up writing about giants in Swaziland who are depressed, right? Like it's inevitable that in fiction, like as you're building the world, anything that you really think kind of creeps out. But maybe in a way, just like how Ellie is like using Paul as a way to get to Aster, it's like I use my films as a way to secretly, you know, address the things that I don't consciously want to admit. But then by the time I'm done with the film, I'm sort of faced with like, oh, I guess that's what I actually think.
Yeah, I mean, because I just feel like there's a kind of engineering in this about these two poles that exist on either side of your protagonist that I feel like, again, I'm saying both these films are about so not only just a central triangle, but triangles bouncing throughout the film.
Yeah. I do think for whatever reasons, I actually love triangles. Not in my real life, but I mean, in my fictional world creating life, like it's actually, I notice this, that even when I write scenes, I really love throwing something in there that just like disturbs the purity of what's happening. It like creates a fun tension for me. Yeah, no, I think you're right.
Well, God, I get to be right for once, and we're out of time. Alice, I'm sorry, but this went so fast. Thank you so much for doing this, and thanks for the movie. It's really terrific.
Thank you so much. This is truly a thrill for me. I really appreciate you taking the time.
My pleasure. My guest, who clearly has a low threshold for thrills, is Alice Wu. Her new film is writer-director, is the half of it on Netflix, a recording engineer at KCRW is Mario Diaz. The show is mixed and edited by Kat Yore. To better days, everybody. I'm Elvis Mitchell. It's The Treatment. To catch up on past episodes of The Treatment, go to kcrw.com or listen on your smartphone with KCRW's mobile apps or subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, or if you listen to podcasts. The Treatment is produced and distributed by KCRW Santa Monica.